Right now, if you're scaffing, critting, screeding, HVACing, dunny diving, or electricianing and sparking, then you don't want to be sitting on the side of the road with a work truck that's smoking. You could get an insurance company that includes roadside assistant for when your work truck ain't starting and needs towing. Get on to truckassist.com.au. It's insurance to keep on earning and bacon and egg rolling. Limits and exclusions apply. Consider the PDS and TMD on the Truck Assist website.
This week on Full Credit to the Noise, the Erebus saga drags on, the Shannon series shines at the island, and Supercars Fight Night sets a date and a venue. Welcome to Full Credit to the Noise. Well, hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to Full Credit to the Noise. You can find this podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at FCTTN Podcast, or one word. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at former_legend. You can find the bloke across from me on Twitter at AVL_motorsport. He's on Instagram at AVL.motorsport. He's on Etsy at AVL.handmadecards. He's a man who this week ignored every Perth weatherman and ploughed ahead with testing his Formula Ford in the mother of all storms. He's proud to confirm that the new Kia Ute is to be called the Kia Van Leeuwen, and tonight he's wearing a Lance Stroll monobrow. Welcome to Speed Cafe's Andrew Van Leeuwen.
Thank you for that highly accurate introduction. Former as usual, I can tell you that I did ignore every Perth weatherman by showing up to the track because it hasn't rained here. Well, it hadn't rained here in Perth for about 25 years, and there was no rain on the forecast, and it tipped it down right over the top of Wanneroo all day on Friday. I did not go out in the rain in the brand new Formula Ford. I left her in the shed. And it turns out testing is completely overrated because I didn't do any laps. I rolled pretty much straight out in quali and I ended up third on race day. So I say tighten those testing rules up even more around the world because if you just get on with it, it can work out just fine.
Did you get to watch any of the Speed series? I sat down and watched it over 2 days. It was quite good. Thoroughly entertained all round. Great racing, great fields. One of the best spectacles as far as a racetrack is concerned, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Outside of Wanneroo, of course.
Absolutely.
The new Ferraris looked great. There were great GT3 fields, probably the best GT3 fields we've probably seen in 2 or 3 years. But the greatest relief of the weekend for me was having Renee Gracie on the screen and not have to worry about my missus walking in on me. that was a bonus. But did you watch any of it? I thought it was a good spectacle. It was probably the best Speed Series ran in a long time.
I didn't get to see much on the Sunday because of my own racing activities, but I watched a lot of it on the Saturday. What's great is just being able to open up 7 Plus and watch it. It's so easy.
I agree.
It's unreal. That's what's great. I would imagine there might be a bit of BOP pain heading towards those Ferraris.
Yes.
Maybe that Mustang GT4 as well. But
yes,
it was certainly a good day to be a new. A good weekend to be a new car in a GT series. It looked like a fun weekend. We had our social media guru Erin on the ground, and she had an absolute blast. She reckons it was great. So that's what you always want to hear.
And two of the best pizza joints on the one island is a very rare thing. But shout out to the bloke on the weekend who got booked on Conrod Strait on Mount Panorama for doing 168 kilometres an hour in a Mustang. We've all been there, let's be honest. He immediately pled to the copper that there was a Camaro doing 175 in front of him, but the local fuzz weren't having none of that, AVL. pretty sure he might have... he'll probably be in court very soon, there might be a Mustang up on cheap on Facebook Marketplace.
Was it Officer Winkup that was not having a bar of this Camaro's going faster than the Mustangs?
It was Constable Baird, from what I've been told, yeah.
There you go.
168, very healthy. All right, let's go to the shift cut. And AVL, the first story comes from the Wide World of Sports, believe it or not. One of your compatriots, Simon Chapman, has reported that Erebus Motorsport...
He's a Kiwi.
threatened to sue Supercars champion Brody Kostecki for allegedly causing the team to suffer significant losses after the driver sought to terminate his contract in the off-season. Wide World of Sports has seen an email from Kostecki's lawyers in early February stating the driver proposed to terminate his contract with the Melbourne-based team. Kostecki's lawyer then received a letter from Erebus by way of lawyer in response to the driver's request saying the team would seek an injunction and sue the 2023 champion for damages if Kostecki's agreement was terminated. AVL, I mean, it just rolls on.
Yeah, look, you can add this to the list of very difficult topics to delve into. I had seen the same information that was published in that Wild World of Sports story. It was sent to me as well. I can't guarantee the absolute authenticity of it, but at the same time, I'd be more surprised if there wasn't legal communications throughout this process than if there was, if that makes sense. I mean, a contracted driver didn't show up for two rounds. A bunch of sponsors left the team. These are things that will generally require letters from lawyers. And that's not to play this down or suggest that there was nothing to it or it had nothing to do with Brody coming back. I honestly don't know that for sure. It certainly adds to the theory that there's more to this than Brody just recovering from a mysterious health issue and deciding that he wants to go racing again.
Spare me.
At the same time, is it the absolute smoking gun? Not necessarily, because again, at the height of the tension between driver and team, when sponsors were walking away and a contracted driver wasn't showing up, it is just impossible to imagine a situation where lawyers weren't involved, you know, and threats of legal action weren't being made. Like, it feels like that's exactly what would happen in these situations.
Well, Whitewater Sports have suggested that the sum of the damages Erebus were seeking from Kostecki was at least between $3 and $4 million had it reached court. Yeah, it would have been interesting to see all that play out.
Yeah.
In those sorts of things, there's one winner in all of that, and that's the the lawyers themselves. But
I mean, and that's the one thing you can say on certain terms, that if it had ended up going legal to that extent, because, you know, we do know that it has been settled out of court, then that's exactly right. Like, the lawyers win and everyone else kind of just loses. And, yeah, that's just – it is absolutely a positive that we're not in that situation.
Brody Kostecki, during the week, cut his first Erebus supercar laps of the year at Winton, ahead of his return to the title-winning squad in New Zealand next week, or this weekend, I should say. The return follows a tumultuous period for both driver and team since the end of last season when Kostecki sat out the first two events of this year. Barry Ryan says things are now back to normal. Heaven knows what that actually means at Erebus. He said it's great to be back doing a test day before New Zealand and having Brody in the car alongside Jacques Lebrock. It's back to normal. We would have liked to have started the year like that, but unfortunately we couldn't. He said, and I quote, "It's great to see Brody happy and healthy and ready to go."
Look, I hope that this is genuine enthusiasm from Barry that his champion driver is back. You know, it's optimistic to say things are back to normal, given the fact that you can take one look
at
the car.
What is normal, Erebus?
Well, that's a good question, but you can take one look at the car and it looks very different to what it did last year because it's got a whole bunch of different sponsors on it and all that sort of stuff. All the stuff we know. I think that given what we've all been through in the last few months, and by we, I sort of mean, you know, people in the paddock and the fans and all that sort of stuff, it's understandable that stuff like this does get treated with a bit of cynicism. That's something that I think the team will have to get used to a bit, particularly as I'm not sure whether we're going to get any real insight into exactly what happened from either party in the short term, or not, you know, not entirely 100% accurate insight either. So I think that's... the team's just going to have to kind of wear the fact that people are going to be a little wary, perhaps a little cynical about, you know, statements like this, that, you know, these nothing to see here statements, everything's great, whatever.
Finally, in the days of our lives of Erebus, the co-driver who helped Brody Kostecki to two Bathurst podiums in the last 3 years has swapped Erebus for Premier Racing for 2024. Premier have announced that veteran racer David Russell will partner James Golding in this year's Sandown 500 and Bathurst 1000. Russell joins the team having spent the last 3 years alongside Brody Kostecki at Erebus. They finished second in 23. The switch comes despite confirmation that Brody is coming back to this team, that he would remain, that Russell would remain with Erebus for 2024, the team had earlier said.
It is definitely an interesting one, given the fact that D-Russ was committed there already, you know, well before everything kind of broke down with Brody and all that sort of stuff. I would imagine that this move was set in motion at a time when Brody wasn't planning on returning to the team. It would be fascinating to know if D-Russ would have a change of heart if he had his time again and knew that Brody was going to come back. I reckon the big winner, though, may well be Juuso Jada. You know, like he could end up alongside Brody for the Bathurst 1000 now. So, you know, stick him back in a factory Merc at the 12-hour next year and he could be a Triple Crown winner by February.
You've been hinting that things have been brewing along nicely for OJ. Juice.
Yeah.
Not so much for OJ. It's been a bad week for OJ. But yeah, interesting times ahead. What about this? Triple Eight has narrowly avoided a fire disaster and damage to its factory after an adjacent building burnt down on Sunday morning. The Supercars and GT Squad's primary workshop in Banyo, north of Brisbane, came under threat from a structure fire that destroyed the building immediately next door. Emergency crews rushed to the scene at 4:30 a.m. 16 fire crews tackled the blaze. The building was completely destroyed. However, all nearby buildings were saved and there were no injuries. Queensland Fire Brigade have denied that the fire was started in a 2023 Tickford Mustang.
That's an important clarification. But I actually, you know, I'd seen a bit of info about this and had a few tip-offs about it, and I got in touch with the comms guy at the team to sort of see whether, you know, just how close a call it was. And it turns out it was a really close call. Like, it was the building.
I thought you were getting a tip-off. I thought you got a tip-off that it was going to happen.
No, that would be interesting. That would be... yeah, no, there's lots of jokes I could make, but I'm definitely not going to. But it was a really close call. It was the building literally right next door to the factory that got absolutely flattened. And what a plot twist that could have been to an already pretty wild supercar season in terms of just shit going on. Like, imagine if the runaway championship leaders and title favourites had all their stuff destroyed.
As many supercar fans have commented, but thank Christ the Flames are back. Cooper Murray is set to make his solo supercars debut at the Better Darwin Triple Crown as part of the Super Cheap Auto Wildcard program. The Triple Eight Run program was formally launched in Melbourne the other night, with the covers coming off a striking new livery. Jeez, it looks good too. The launch also included key details of the wildcard program, including the confirmation. Like last year, it'll span over three events. He'll get to drive at Darwin by himself before being joined by Craig Lowndes for both the Penrite Sandown 500 and the Repco Bathurst 1000.
Look, it's just good news that Super Cheap Auto and Triple Eight are keeping this initiative going.
I love this.
And they're spending money and putting kids in race cars. Like, there's not much not to really like about it. I like that it includes the Darwin round because that gives the program a bit of airtime away from all the mess of colour and noise that is the enduro events. And it's a chance for Cooper to benchmark himself. You know, in a way, there's better scope to get on the radar of a team in a solo round than there is in the enduros, where there are so many additional factors that affect performance. So Supercheap also announced that they'll back the program next year as well. So Lowndesy will be paired up with another young driver next year. So smarten up your CVs, kids, or maybe you as well, former, if you want to have a bit of a
imagine? I think he might need a seat insert if I was to jump in that seat.
Tell you what, I might send Jamie some results from Wanneroo on the weekend, actually.
You'd have to be a sniff, especially if betting the brakes in was part of your job. Let's talk about Phillip Island because, like we said, the Shannon series looked good. There was good fields, strong fields, actually. And if your dad used to be a race car driver, chances are you're going to have a good weekend down at Phillip Island. In the Trans Ams, Jimmy Golding won the weekend, winning the last race. Nash Morris and Todd Hazelwood filled the podium places. In the Fanatec GT World Challenge Australia, powered by AWS, that's right, Tim Miles and Brendan Leach prevailed in their Audi after an epic battle between Miles and not Michael, not Mick, not Ralph, but Brad Schumacher, that ended up with the Schumacher Audi running off the track to gather up and get back to third. Second on debut was the Ferrari 296 of Chaz Mostert and Liam Talbot. And in the TCRs, Brad Harris took the round win from Ben Barguana and Clay Richards. And in GT4, George Medici and Rylan Gray, a young man who many people have already know about because he had a movie made about him called 50 Shades of Grey. He took their maiden win for the GT4 Mustang in its Australian debut.
His dad was a race car driver as well, wasn't he? Rylan Gray?
Yeah.
Jeremy Gray?
Gray? I think he had a... Yeah, and had a decent-looking Capri at one stage too.
There you go. There you go. No, I haven't seen that movie, and I certainly don't think I'm going to anytime soon. But
ladies love it.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. There you go. That's actually. So here's a fun fact that I sort of picked up over the weekend. So Brendan Leacher, you mentioned, who's moved to Australia, you know, to race these cars. I think he's actually housemates with Simon Chapman, the Wide World of Sports journalist that you were talking about before, because they are actually compatriots. I assume you mean like colleagues or something when you said compatriots before, because Chapo is definitely a Kiwi.
Okay. Well, geez, you're very strong on that clarification. Well, that's twice you've dug in on that.
I couldn't come from further away from New Zealand if I tried. Not
I mean,
as
compatriots
an Aussie.
As in professional compatriots, but anyway.
I don't think that's what it means.
You're the word guy. I don't know. Let's talk about Fernando Alonso, because he's just signed a new long-term Formula One contract with Aston Martin. The 42-year-old will remain behind the wheel with Aston Martin into the next generation of Formula One regulations into 2026. The deal was announced with a five-word statement. He said, "Ow, my back, it hurts." Oh, no, it says, "I am here to stay." Alonso then faced invited media, including Speed Cafe, where he elaborated. He said that included the revelation that the deal is the longest Alonso has had in Formula One, includes a minimum two-year commitment in the car and a role with the team's management beyond his racing career. How is old Benjamin Button going?
That is amazing. I am just going to just backtrack slightly, because compatriot can mean companion or colleague. So you win this round, former.
I'm going to add that to the mum's life thing. I think I've just gained a point.
You could have the story could have been that compatriot can mean companion or colleague, and I would have gone absolutely no way, because I actually didn't know that. So you can have that one. What are we talking about, Alonso? Yes, that he's immensely popular and he's pretty fast. So I guess it's a no brainer that the team want to keep him, and he's smart enough to keep on cashing in. So good on him.
Can we read anything into this as to what's going to happen with the monobrow Lance?
I don't think so.
Does this mean that Lance might stay now because they'll just keep the same lineup?
Well, you got your guy. Fernando. If your car's half a sniff, you got the guy who's going to go win you the race. So it probably does open up the freedom to keep Lance in the car. But I honestly don't. I don't know.
Interesting. Andretti Global has continued its push into the Formula One world, despite having a place on the grid rejected in 2025. Formula One itself denied Andretti's bid to join the grid following an evaluation on the submission and forecasted value the team would bring to the competition. However, Michael Andretti has continued his project of Formula One regardless, and on Wednesday opened a new facility in Silverstone. "I think it shows how strongly we feel and what we're doing," he said. Andretti Global is planning to enter Formula 2 and Formula 3 in order to create a talent ladder to help feed its Formula 1 team with American drivers. Andretti but noted that promoting American talent is the main aim for the twin junior category programs, but they won't be restricted to those just hailing from the US.
I guess this is all the team can do, you know? They can just all they can
I
do.
I really
is,
like it. I think it's a really good move.
Yeah, well, just keep showing how much that the team wants it, how ready it can be if the opportunity comes along, and how it can benefit the Formula One ecosystem even without being directly involved in it, you know, in Formula One itself just yet. So, yeah, I think this is a pretty clever move.
Yeah, so do I, mate. Yeah, I mean, the only slight on all this is that in the same sheds will also be the Formula E, and what else is boring? Yeah. But other than that, I think it's a smart move from them. And probably the biggest story to come out of this week in motorsport around the world, Charles Leclerc has begun selling ice cream in a latest business adventure. He's well known for his eclectic pursuits, which have even included playing the piano and spending time in music studios. While his on-track prowess has probably plateaued this year, it's his off-track adventures that continue to captivate. According to reports from Milano Today, which I subscribe to, great read, the Monegasque star is poised to unveil an artisanal ice cream, having christened it LEC in Milan. Plans are underway for the brand's grand debut, scheduled for mid-April. It has many flavours relating to motorsport. The Alpine flavour tastes like shit and takes ages to eat. Mercedes flavour isn't really nice this year, but next year they're sure it's going to be the best flavour in the world. The Ferrari strategist and pit crew will work in the shop on their weekends off, so expect service to take ages and you're more likely to get the wrong order. And finally, ice creams will be available in soft serve, super soft serve, or intermediates.
Look, I'm still going to take a bottle
of... It's the best I could do.
No, that's good. I'm still going to take a bottle of Danny Rick's Red over a LeClaire ice cream, but whatever floats your boat.
What about one of Lewis's vegan burgers?
No, I'll go with the Red, I think. I'll stick with that. Maybe a coffee from Valtteri as well.
Righto, let's head to an ad. Something very exciting is coming up in the supercar world.
Oh, I'm looking forward to
this. You will not want to miss. Full credit to the noise.
June 30, 2024, Judgment Day. It's time. We are set to witness five of the most anticipated boxing matches in history. Cameron Salty Waters takes on Matt Spatial Awareness Payne in a fight for the Australian flyweight title. But that's not all. On the same night, watch two legends duke it out for the final time as Mark Fonzie Scaife looks for revenge against Gerald the Terminator McDonough. Boxing's first ever cage match sees the might of Walkinshaw Andretti United take on the up-and-coming superstars Matt Stone Racing in a no-holds-barred battle for the ages. Watch Dave Tinfoil Reynolds take on his natural enemy, Big Pharma, in a winner-take-all bout that will go down in history. Come and witness two old rivals, Tony Longhurst and Paul Morris, put the helmets back on one more time and duke it out in a fight where no one's knuckles will be safe. Unfortunately, the anticipated Brody Boom Boom Kostecki versus Big Bad Bustling Barry Ryan has had to be postponed for 6 months. June 31, get it on Main Event. KO or be there.
Well, that sounds like a hell of a night. It's available on KO at only $99, which always seems like a bargain.
That is a bargain.
Yeah.
I'd pay it. I would absolutely pay it.
Which stinky are you looking forward to the most? To see that.
Ooh, that's a very good question and one that could get me in a lot of trouble. I think Cam and Matt Payne would be good to see going at it. A couple of sort of different, I can imagine very different fighting styles going
on. I'm really looking forward to seeing Reynolds take on Big Pharma. Finally, it's the fight we've all been waiting for.
Absolutely.
All right, let's bring back Missing Word as we head into a very busy weekend of motorsport. So play that jingle. What a life to take, what a bond to break, I'll be missing. A word. Yeah, we'll have to look at that jingle, actually. That's pretty lame. All right, let's start with this.
Nah, it's great.
What about this? Erebus... God, the team we just never seem to finish talking about. We'll finish the 2024 season blank. AVL.
With a vacancy. I cannot see Brody continuing there beyond his current contract, no matter how nice they play for the next remainder of the season. So I think they will be looking for a new driver again for 2025.
Yeah, I've written Erebus will finish the 2024 season doing driver evaluation days at Winton.
There you go. There you go.
Get in there, Juice. Yeah. Not you, Ford Bronco guy, the other one. Yeah. What about
the
this? The good juice. The biggest talking point to come from the upcoming Supercars Puff Piece docuseries will be blank.
Taupo? I mean, that's what it's about. I haven't actually had a chance to watch it yet. I will try and do that before I jump on the big plane tomorrow night. Well, tonight, by the time this comes out.
So for those that don't know, this will be... a series where they'll look at following the Kiwi guys as they head over to New Zealand to race the first time at Taupo. So you've written Taupo will be the talking point. I've written the biggest talking point to come from the upcoming Supercars Puff Piece docuseries will be what the combined cost of styling moose is between Jackson Evans, Ryan Wood, Matt Payne, Andre Heimgartner, and Richie Stanaway, because there would be some hair gel amongst those boys.
I guess so. I don't know. I don't know if Ryan Wood runs a whole lot of hair gel, or Matt Payne, for that. They did. There was in the preview, they were playing some, what's it called, like paddleboard?
Okay.
Which I always find like an odd sport. Like just, not like paddleboarding, like the tennis with the paddles, paddle tennis.
Oh, paddle ball.
Paddle, what did I say, board?
Board, yeah, probably different.
Okay, well, that's where the confusion may have come from. But, paddle ball is what I meant to say. Yeah, it's just play tennis. To get a tennis racket. Anyway, I'll ask him about that on the weekend.
Okay, so let's talk about Taupo. The biggest talking point coming out of Taupo will be blank.
degradation. Apparently that track chews tyres, or at least it has in the past. So that's going to be something to watch over the weekend, according to quite a number of people that I've spoken to.
I've written the biggest talking point coming into Taupo will be the previous record for how far behind a champion has come from on the leaderboard to end up winning the title. Because if Brady happens to win a couple of races, that will be the first thing people will have a knee-jerk reaction to looking at, is whether he can do it.
I reckon he's a big chance of winning a race on the weekend. You know,
I think like, so too.
I think that it's perfect to go to a track like this, where everyone's kind of starting from zero, and I would not be... I'm not saying he's definitely going to win. Obviously, it's hard to have sat that, you know, had that time out of the car, but I would equally be in no way shocked if he goes out and wins a race or ends up in the podium.
Mm. What about this one? After 4 years, the 888 wildcard project has blank.
I think it's been insanely clever. And I know Craig Lowndes has only been for 3 of those 4 years, but the way it allows 888 to keep the biggest name in the sport inside its own team,
yes,
enjoy the commercial benefits of that, not have him race off and join another team and take all the commercial benefits and the fact that he's Craig Lowndes and still a very highly skilled race car driver to another team and retain the ability to go out there and get the best co-drivers on the market for the main Red Bull Ampol cars, it's genius. And it won't be costing them any money either. Like, it'll be very, it's all very well commercialized.
Oh,
like,
it should be absolutely very cost neutral. After 4 years, the 888 Wildcard Project has spotted more talent than former legend walking along a beach in Rio.
It's done a
decent job.
I thought this was an odd question and framed oddly, but it makes sense now.
Okay, the next one. It's going back to Formula E, one of my favourite topics. In my mind, Formula E is as popular as blank.
Well, I was going to say as electric cars themselves, which I thought kind of summed it up, although I'm pretty sure that a lot of people that like electric cars don't like any form of motor racing, electrified or otherwise, which I think is one of the issues with the whole Formula E thing. So, yeah, I don't know. Look, and just to clarify, I'm not anti-electric cars. I just don't want one.
Yeah, I fell down a rabbit hole of looking at those marquees, the Mustang marquee on the weekend, watched some videos and everything else. Yeah. Not sold at all, I've got to be honest, and there's better buys on the market for the price. In my mind, Formula E is as popular as former legend at a singles nudist camp in Rio. No good.
These sound like very personal anecdotes that you... there's a theme here.
I'll get some counselling after this, but what about this? If George Russell went to my school, he would be blank.
Dobbing on the cool kids smoking in the bathroom.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah.
About an hour later, he'd have his head in the toilet.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because if George Russell went to my school, he would be familiar with the sound of flushing toilets and wet hair.
There it is.
Something I wanted to touch on.
I like this little riff of him being just a mad nerd. I like it.
Oh, he's just the biggest dobber. He's just like this store detective. Something I wanted to touch on a couple of weeks ago when I started watching the Xfinity series, the Toyota Supra NASCAR. And I've written here, the Toyota Supra NASCAR is blank. Have you seen it?
I have seen it. I mean, I'm not too sure what you're getting at, but I'm going to say it's still better than the Gen 2 Mustang.
I've written the Toyota Supra NASCAR is uglier than a redheaded stepchild, because fair dinkum, it's a strange looking beast with the Supra front end and then some sedan back end. It's a strange, strange thing.
It is still no Gen 2 Mustang.
All right. And this final one, it's about you. The biggest disappointment in AVL's interview with Scott McLaughlin on the hard card this week was the lack of talk about blank.
I know where you're going with this, but I'm going to say the lack of talk about Jack Revolt.
Jeez, you've gone the soft answer there. The biggest disappointment in AVL's interview with Scott McLaughlin on the hard card this week was the lack of talk about, you know. Yeah, all right, let's go to a break.
Just before we do, just make sure you do listen to that hard cut interview. It was actually
a good chat.
I reckon it was a really good chat,
mate.
Really good
he was up for a yarn. He's in good form. He was really good.
Yeah, so a little cross promotion there, but it is actually there was a lot of really good insight from Scott. I really enjoyed that chat.
Yeah, he didn't leave much on the table when we talked about what was happening over here with the whole Brody thing and everything. It was a good listen.
Absolutely.
And sometimes I feel Scotty can be hot and cold, but he was quite good with you, so well done, mate.
Right now, if you're scaffing, critting, screeding, HVACing, dunny diving, or electrician and sparking, then you don't want to be sitting on the side of the road with a work truck that's smoking. You could get an insurance company that includes roadside assistant for when your work truck ain't starting and needs towing. Get onto truckassist.com.au. It's insurance to keep on earning and bacon and egg rolling. Limits and exclusions apply. Consider the PDS and TMD on the Truck Assist website.
Yes, welcome back to the final segment, Rear of the Grid. And I'll tell you something now, I'm in all sorts of trouble and I'm not confident on the Mum's Life Sticker Challenge this week. Currently the score is 6-4. I'm going to make a statement. AVL tells me whether it's a lie or whether it's the truth. If he gets it right, he gets a point. If he gets it wrong, I get a point. Currently it's 6-4. I'm in trouble. Are you listening?
I'm listening. I'm paying attention.
Now, I'll lift the curtain on this show because last week I read this to you and I'm watching you on Skype and I thought, geez, he's thinking hard and long about this, and it was for about 30 seconds. I thought, he hasn't moved. And then I realised that there'd been a big problem with Skype. So this week, keep moving so I know that you are still there online.
We are using Zoom as well, let me just clarify. So it's not 2006 and we're on Skype. We are actually on Zoom. Anyway, yes, carry on.
All right. German Hans Heyer. Heard of him?
Yes.
That's not good. Attempted to qualify for his home Grand Prix, the 1977 German Grand Prix at Hockenheim, driving a Penske for ATS. However, at the end of qualifying, he missed out by half a second. Heyer was well known by the marshals, and they conveniently looked the other way when on lap one he pulled out of pit lane and joined the race despite not qualifying. The stewards didn't realise that he'd joined the race until the local crowd erupted after seeing him drive by at the back of the field. However, it all came to naught for Hans when he retired from the race on lap 9 with a gearbox problem and then was disqualified, leaving him as the first and only person to record a DNQ, a DNF and a DSQ in one Grand Prix. True or false?
Well, former, we know the Germans famously have a great sense of humour, so I'm going to go with a big old true on this one.
It's 7-4. God damn it. Yeah, I knew it.
I actually know that story. I do a lot of translation work for a German magazine that loves covering up stories like that.
Oh, come on, man. So that should have been a declaration at the start of that story.
Absolutely pulled the wrong chute by going down that path.
I have to talk to my friends at Bluebet and get a point start on this competition because I am in all sorts at the moment. All right, letter of the week, and it came a couple of weeks ago from Nathan Young, and I forgot to ask this, but I think it's a good question. He said, on the TV coverage, why do commentators in the V8 supercars not stop talking when their driver radio is on, similar to what Formula One do? It's so rude by the commentators, and then it's hard to hear what's going on. Cheers, Nathan. Nathan wrote to us on Facebook, by the way. AVL, have you ever noticed this? Because I actually think the one thing Sky, and I'm not a great fan, as you all know, of the Sky F1 commentary, but what they do is once... Yeah, that's right, news.
The next thing is they'll be tearing up Lewis Hamilton's dress sense.
No. Mate, I've got a good joke about that. But what they do is they stop talking the moment some of the radio comes over. Now, I understand that the Formula One coverage, someone vets it before they put it to air, whereas I think the supercar stuff comes on live on air. That might be the problem. Have you got anything to say about this? Why do they talk over the top of it? Why do they play it if it's not vetted?
It's a great question, and you're 100% right. The thing is that the team radio still isn't utilised as a broadcast tool in supercars to the extent that it is in F1 is what it really boils down to. I don't think the commentators know it's coming. They're listening to broader radio scans themselves as well. So they've got their own radio that they're sort of listening to that's not making broadcasts, and then some makes broadcasts. But I don't believe there's any strict direction regarding that to the commentary team. So it's not a commentator issue. It's a production one. I would love to see the radio better utilized in Supercars broadcast. I'm guessing it's a cost thing because from a philosophy point of view, you know, we actually see Supercars utilizing radio for social bits and pieces, like we talked about, I think it was last week. Yep. So they're not against doing it. So I'm guessing it's obviously just a cost or a resource thing as to why they don't do it. But it's certainly something that I wouldn't be surprised to see. You know, particularly, yeah, the head of TV, Nathan Prendergast, does have extensive experience in Formula One, so I wouldn't be surprised if we did see something like that in the future, but that would explain why it happens like that. I don't think you can put any blame on the commentators.
Yeah, good call. I guess, I don't know whether Formula One do this and ask the drivers not to use the profanities as much as they probably could, but I noticed that they are a little bit more reserved in dropping the Fs and the Cs as compared to the Supercars blokes who seem to have to get that cleaned up live on air. Or
well, it's delayed, but so if there are lots of Fs and Cs, they just bleep the crap out of it on F1, know, because and that is why often, you know, the flip side of that is that quite often you'll hear a message and it kind of doesn't make a whole bunch of sense until they say, oh yeah, that was 3 laps ago when that kind of happened. But still, it is better utilised in the Formula One broadcast, you know, in the general sense. There's no doubt about that.
All right, that'll do us for this episode of Full Credit to the Noise. Don't forget, you can find this show on all the socials at FCTTN Podcast. You can read AVL's excellent work over at speedcafe.com, where they break the big news first. Until next time, I've been Formula Legend, he's been AVL, and this has been Full Credit to the Noise. We'll see you in New Zealand.
Bye.
Full Credit to the Noise.